All right. Good morning, everyone. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us, Justice Carpio, again. Very, very interesting times.
Thank you, Richard, and good morning to our viewers.
Justice, of course, before talking about the big picture, something that we did in a separate show of mine that will hopefully come in the coming weeks. First, pag-usapan natin itong gentleman's agreement na sinasabi ni Harry Roque. From a legal standpoint, before we talk about the politics and circumstances, is there anything such as the gentleman's agreement? What is, does it have any kind of a binding nature? Or if it doesn't have a binding nature, what's a gentleman's agreement in international affairs?
Well, a gentleman's agreement that is not publicly declared, it's not publicly announced, is just binding between the two so-called gentlemen. And it will not bind the successor or the public because the public and the successor didn't know about it. It's unlike a unilateral declaration where the president, if he declares unilaterally that he's giving up the West Philippine Sea to China, that's binding on the state because that's considered a unilateral declaration that's announced publicly. But in this case, nobody knew about it. And so they could not react. Nobody could do anything about it. So it's only binding between the two of them.
Justice, do we have like a precedence for that in the case of the Philippines or something relevant to the territorial disputes, a kind of a gentleman's agreement? I mean, like Malaysia, I don't know, Malaysia, China, or that Gulf of Tonkin agreement between Vietnam and China. That's more than a gentleman's agreement, right?
Yeah, well, I can't think of a similar case at the moment. We have to remember that Duterte denied his spokesman, Attorney Salvador Panelo, denied that there was such an agreement. And Harry Roque seemed to have backed down from his claim. And he was saying that, yes, I agree to the statement of Panelo. So it looks like it's being denied by the Duterte camp. And even the person who first brought it up has backed down on his claim. And Panelo said Harry Roque was lying and was just looking for publicity when he said that. So the spokesperson who replaced Panelo was, of course, Harry Roque. And Panelo said that Harry Roque was just a publicity seeker and was lying. So we have to look at that entire the context of how this happened. And well, first of all, legally, it's not binding on the Philippines. It's not binding on the successor. And third, it's even being denied now. If you recall, it came out in the Manila Times newspaper that an unnamed embassy official of China told the reporter of Manila Times that there was a gentleman's agreement. And that's how Roque reacted. He confirmed that there was a gentleman's agreement. But Panelo, he said he checked with President Duterte, and President Duterte said, no, there is no gentleman's agreement. So that's where we are now.
Well, I mean, just to be clear, this is not the first time we see Duterte officials completely contradicting each other. And in this sense, I won't rule out the possibility of some rivalry going on between the two spokesmen, not to mention colleagues. I think both of them are at SMNI, di ba? Ang media ng mga bayani. Ayun kay Harry Roque. But setting aside that dynamic of the, let's say, interesting siblings rivalry going on within the DDS camp, what would you, hypothetically, what would have been the circumstances for a potential gentleman's agreement? Because, I mean, I don't want to be facetious about it, but there are times you rather trust China over these people. I mean, considering the credibility of these people, probably they gave something to China. Galit na galit ang China.
Yeah. Well, legally, it will not bind the successor because it was a secret agreement and not disclosed. Nobody could react to it. It was binding as far as both of them would agree to follow it during their term. But Duterte now is out of office. And of course, Roque himself was saying that it was only binding between the two, between President Z and Duterte, probably because Duterte said, "I love President Z." That's why he made that promise. That's the situation now. And the Chinese embassy cannot produce any document because there is no document. They said it was just verbal. If you recall, President Duterte also said that he has allowed China to fish, the Chinese fishermen to fish in the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines in the West Philippine Sea. That clearly violated the Constitution, which says the marine wealth in the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines is reserved for exclusively for Filipinos. So he violated it. I was waiting for Senate to investigate it because, any executive agreement, if you call it, or any treaty must be taken up by the Senate. At least they must discuss it. If it constitutes a treaty, it constitutes a derogation of our sovereign rights. But nobody wanted to discuss it. They were all afraid of Duterte. And that's already the Senate. How much more for the House? So it was a very strange situation where Duterte kept on violating the Constitution when he said the Navy will patrol only the territorial sea. The Constitution says the state shall protect its marine wealth in its exclusive economic zone. So, you know, we were the only ones who were calling Duterte to task. No? We were calling him out of bounds. But the rest of the Congress, they just refused to tackle it. And I don't know why. And this is the result. Duterte kept on making those statements. I think we should be very strict when it comes to the Constitution. We should hold every public official accountable if they violate the Constitution openly. It was an open violation.
Justice, of course, just to be clear, I mean, biglang maraming matapang ngayon sa ating Kongreso and Senado. Now, everyone is fighting for the West Philippine Sea. Yung iba nga, nagti-t-shirt pa ng West Philippine Sea, may designer t-shirt, pumupunta sa Gilas, Pilipinas. Of course, we all very much remember how these people were reacting back in the day, including against us, right, when we were calling out the words of the president. But, I mean, putting aside the antics and the clown show and everything during the era of Duterte and even after, as we can see right now, sila-sila na lang, nag-aaway-aaway na sila. I think Senator Riza Ontiveros, some of the few independent-minded people out there in the government, she said that, aren't we talking about a potentially treasonous situation here? I mean, shouldn't we have a thorough, comprehensive investigation? Which organs of the state should be involved aside from the Senate? Should the executive branch also launch a serious investigation into this? Because, I mean, we can laugh about this, but if this is potentially a treasonous situation, then something more serious should be discussed. The reason I'm talking about this is because the DFA's statement in early March more or less implied that there was such a proposal and it was contrary to our national interest, as they put it explicitly. So DFA is washing off its hands. So it looks like no official organ was involved, but some people may have been involved, regardless of what Salvador Panelo or some extremely credible people are saying out there.
Yeah, you're right. The DFA disclosed that there were proposals by China, but the DFA rejected it because it would violate the Constitution. It will be against the arbitral award. But maybe what Senator Riza Ontiveros is doing is the right thing, because under existing law, treason can be committed only during wartime. And this is really, if Duterte did it during wartime, this is treason. He can be executed for treason if we have a penalty for execution for treason. But I think what Riza should do is to conduct the investigation in aid of legislation, so that we will have legislation in place during peacetime. Because during wartime, if a person commits a treasonous act, that's governed by the revised penal code. But there is no equivalent law during peacetime. The nearest law is when you are disloyal to the Republic. That's considered a violation of the code of conduct of government officials. But the penalty there is dismissal from office. So it's not the, I think the penalty is too light. And of course, if you are in office, you can be impeached if it's a culpable violation of the Constitution and you are an impeachable officer. But the president controls Congress, so nobody would file exactly what happened during time of Duterte. So we should have a law saying that if you commit a treasonous act, the same treasonous act during peacetime, then you will be subject to a penalty also, which will be probably lighter during peacetime if it is committed than in wartime. But the I think there is a gap in the law, because if it is a crime during peacetime, during wartime, it should also be a crime during peacetime, because it it injures the national interest. So that should be the direction of the inquiry. That's in aid of legislation, because you are thinking of new legislation that will apply during peacetime, because there's a gap, a hiatus in the law.
Yeah. Thank you, Justice, for pointing that out. I mean, why do you think we have such a gap? I mean, isn't it like commonsensical that, you know, treasonous acts could happen in a non-war situation, but in still very, very fragile situations that could, it could, you know, lead to war? I mean, the United States had all sorts of different legislations during the Cold War period, whereby you're not talking about direct war with the Soviet Union, but, you know, potentially disastrous, you know, actions by American officials that could completely undermine their national security. I mean, obviously, if you watch the movie Oppenheimer, you would have criticism because it was used to, you know, to red tag, essentially. No, but nevertheless, in democracies today, in mature democracies today, do we have any kind of a legal blueprint that we can draw on?
Yes, the U.S., U.K., and other democracies in EU, they all have laws even during peacetime, because they had this during the Cold War, a lot of their government officials and citizens were recruited by the KGB, and so they developed that they had to promulgate laws to counter the communist recruitment, the KGB recruitment. But we did not have that kind of experience. We just copied our present revised penal code is copied almost verbatim from the revised penal code of Spain. And it's very old law, and that's it. In the case of treason, it applied only during wartime. So we have to update. That's why I'm hoping that this legislative inquiry of Senator Riza will move in that direction, that there is really a gap. There's a black hole in our legal system. And we should, because it's not only Duterte. You have a lot of Filipinos now who are mouthing Chinese propaganda because they're paid by China. We have a law already. We copied it. It was enacted during the time of Marcos, during martial law. It's like all those who are lobbyists for a foreign country, paid lobbyists, must register. But that's only for purposes of registration. So you will disclose your transparency. But we really need something, because we may have some military officers who will be recruited by China during peacetime. That's the problem. Or civilian. If you are a military officer, you will be governed by the military rules. You can be subjected to court martial. But for civilians, there is that very weak provision in the code of conduct for government employees. Yes, it's a violation, but this penalty is just dismissal from government office.
Justice, I mean, doesn't that kind of reflect some fundamental weaknesses and sense of complacency sa Pilipinas. I mean, in different episodes with you and other people are in the know pagdating sa West Philippine Sea, we discuss a lot about national defense, AFP, external security. But I find it quite surprising that, you know, we also have all of these serious gaps domestically also in terms of our legislation. I mean, in medyo masipag naman mga abogado natin. It's not like we're a country shy of making legislations. I don't want to be too speculative, but I'm half shocked at the fact that all of these decades, you know, we did not try to take care of some of these basic things. Is it because we were too reliant on the United States throughout the Cold War period, and we are still trying to find our own footing? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, yes, I think we have that gap in the law, and we have been very cavalier. In fact, you remember President Duterte, he allowed DITO, which is practically financed by Chinatel, a Chinese state-owned company, to install their towers in all our military camps. Can you just imagine that? Chinese receivers, transceivers will be installed in our military camps. So they will all collect all the communications of our military. And, you know, to the credit of our military, they refused to implement it. They could not, of course, say no directly to the commander-in-chief, President Duterte, but they just delayed, and now they're not implementing it, but because they know. But of course, I wrote about it, and like General Esperon, who was head of the NSA at the time, they all defended Duterte, but the people on the ground knew the injury that could be caused, so they just refused to implement it, while the their superiors who paid lip service to it, but they did not. They all of them really didn't want to implement it, and luckily, not a single tower was installed. But that's the I think we need really a whole of nation approach on national security. We should be conscious. Right now, we allowed. In the draft of the amended Public Service Act that Duterte proposed to Congress, he wanted our telecom company can be 100% owned by China, by foreigners. And he said, I will give the third telco to China, Chinatel. Can you just imagine that? And so what happened here was we all worked to stop it, to create poison pills. What happened was the intelligence service of the armed forces proposed to Congress to put their subject to national security. The president can decide not to implement this law allowing foreigners to own 100% of our telecom if it infringes our national security. So that's one layer. And the telcos, Globe and PLDT, suggested to Congress that, yes, foreigners can 100%, but not state-owned enterprises, because the Chinese telecom companies are state-owned. So they were able to insert that. And I myself, because I was worried, I suggested to some congressmen that to put their subject to reciprocity, because if we allow China to own 100% of our telecom company, China should also allow us. But in China, foreigners cannot own a majority of a telecom company because they know a telecom company is essential to national security. You cannot allow foreigners to own your telecom company, especially under Chinese law. All Chinese citizens and companies, wherever they are in the world, are obliged to turn over to China, the Chinese security agencies, any data that is in their possession. So if they establish a telecom tower in Camp Aguinaldo, and they get all those communications of our general headquarters, the Chinese who operate the DITO will be forced to turn over the data to Chinese security agencies. So there are three layers now that prevent the Chinatel from gaining majority control of DITO, because first, if you're a state-owned company, you cannot own majority of Philippine telecom companies. Second, the president, for reasons of national security, can prohibit. And third, it must be subject to reciprocity. And China will never open up their telecom industry to foreign ownership, foreign control, because for them, they cannot. The essence of the Communist Party, their total control, is control of communications. They cannot allow people to talk freely. That's why they even have a firewall for the internet. They have complete surveillance, and they intrude into your privacy. That's the way to control society under a communist regime. So for them, the telecom companies are very important, critical for control, for controlling society, and they will never allow foreigners to control or manage their telecom industries. So they cannot comply with that condition, subject to reciprocity.
I mean, I would say, Justice, that even some of their supposed private companies, their being private is questionable, right? I mean, considering how in China the government just can come in and take over the company, or has essentially, you know, versions of commissars in the board of governors. I mean, there are so many levers that the Chinese government uses and can use to essentially force Chinese companies, even privately owned companies, to toe the line, right? I mean, I think Huawei, last time I checked, is a private company, but I think no one in any mature democracy would assume that Huawei is not being influenced by the Chinese government one way or another, considering how much subsidies and how much direct legal and political control the Chinese Communist Party has over practically everything in China, right? I mean, so in that case, doesn't this mean that we have to be careful with any kind of deal with any major Chinese company as far as our critical infrastructure is concerned, which also raises the issue of national grid, right? Because
yes,
it's not only the correct ownership, right? It's also the maintenance, the engineering. I mean, I think, again, a number of senators, including Senator Ontiveros back in the day, Miriam Defensor, and more recently also Rafi Tulfo, have raised issues about, you know, essentially Chinese engineers running the show in some of this company. I mean, in the grid sector, for instance. I mean, so should we do something more drastic here? Essentially, renationalize some of these sectors, or come up with very explicit national security papers with respect to China?
Well, on the national grid, I think we have to renationalize it. We cannot, you know, the Chinese are the one running the grid. They're technicians. There was a time when they removed all the Filipino technicians, and the ISAP complained, the intelligence service of the Armed Forces of the Philippines complained. So I don't know if they were brought back, but control over that over the technical matters under the national grid is in the hands of the Chinese, and they deny that it can be shut down from China. But I believe it can be shut down by China, because these are all done electronically and through the internet. We can open if you have a house abroad, you can open it from here through the internet. You can start your car in New York from here through the internet. So you can shut down the grid from Beijing. It's as simple as that now. So we have to be very careful about this, because China wants to grab our maritime zones and island territories in the West Philippine Sea. And we have to be conscious of that, how can we fight China if they can shut down our national grid? That's why the Americans, in their EDCA sites, they put up their own generator. They will not rely on the national grid. That's how critical it is. Even all our camps should have their own generator, because in case of a conflict in the West Philippine Sea, China will just switch off the national grid, and all our camps will go dark.
So again, last time we checked, this is from the Arroyo to Aquino era, right? This the Chinese
Yes,
involvement.
that happened. The privatization happened during the Arroyo
Arroyo administration.
administration. But you know, national grid is like printing money because the everybody has to pass through the national grid, all the power. If you put up a plant in Quezon, Pabilao, it has to pass through the national grid because the power is delivered in Metro Manila. So it's like a tollway. The transport will not move unless you pass through the tollway. And there will be no electricity in Manila without that national grid. So it's really, and it will always be profitable. There's no way a national grid can lose money because you just add on to the you just charge, and everybody needs it. I don't know why it was privatized when it's so critical for national security, and there's no way it was not losing money. It should not lose money by definition. If it was losing money, then there's a lot of corruption there.
I mean, just as I don't want to be self-deprecating too much, but para on the thing, dito is para medyo banana republic tayo. I mean, there's so many safeguards. Basic safeguards you would assume in any serious democracy or nation states that it looks like they're really missing in the case of the Philippines. And honestly, I mean, Duterte being a lawyer himself, I'm not necessarily the best lawyer, but being the lawyer himself, perhaps was aware of a lot of these gaps in the system that he exploited on many fronts, particularly also dito sa West Philippine Sea issue. Is that also your understanding?
Yes, he knew what he was doing, but he did it. That means it was intentional. When he said, do not patrol the EEZ, just patrol up to our territorial sea, he knew the consequences. That means China will grab our EEZ. Nobody will oppose China. But he did it willingly because he wanted to do it as a favor for China. It was against their national interests. That's why I said in wartime that would be treason. But in peacetime, that's culpable violation of the Constitution. He's an impeachable officer, but you need Congress to impeach him, and everyone in Congress will not do it. Why? Because you know why all the congressmen are under the thumb of the president? Because of the pork barrel. The Supreme Court before Congress had when they passed the General Appropriations Act, there would be a line there that the congressman can recommend where the public works will be placed in their district. But the Supreme Court ruled that is unconstitutional because Congress can only legislate. It cannot implement. That is an executive function. So now, but Congress, the congressmen still want their pork barrel. So they put the entire amount of the pork barrel in the Department of Public Works. And it's given entirely up to the president to distribute it. So you have to now kowtow to the president to get your pork barrel because you cannot recommend anymore. And so the president, Duterte, said, okay, I will give you your pork barrel, but I'll put here for later release. Remember that for later release. When will it be released? After you have passed the bill allowing foreigners to own telco, because I want the Chinatel to be the third telco. I will also release it if you cancel the ABS-CBN franchise. So it was used in the hands of a president with that mentality. You can see what will happen.
But
But in the hands of a
not to
president
mention
like
the
Duterte,
narco politician list, you know, I mean, he could also put you on the list of narco po politicians, which is even
yes.
worse, right?
So, in the presidency is something that's really, you just have to put a decent man there, somebody who's after the national interest. In the hands of a president like Mark Fidel Ramos or Ninoy Pinoy Aquino, then you can, these are decent people. They will not do something like that. But the hands, well, in the hands of a Marcos Sr. or in the hands of a Duterte, it's terrible because they don't care. They will just, if they want to give up or they want to China to come in and control our telecom, they will do it through this pork barrel because they control Congress through the pork barrel. And if they want to punish ABS-CBN or any other broadcast company, they can do it. They will tell the congressmen, do not renew the franchise, otherwise you will not get your budget. So everybody lined up to vote against the renewal of the franchise of ABS-CBN. That was the tool that was used.
Yeah, so that's where we see talaga, I think, presidential bandwagon system na sinasabi, no? And it's so easy to bandwagon around the president, or the president has many whips, right? To leverage in order to essentially neutralize checks and balance. I mean, obviously, we saw that also most dramatically dun sa issue ng EJK at saka drug war ni Digong. So, unfortunately, nagsabay-sabay lahat ng mga abuso na yan. But Justice, before going back again to this issue ng Ayung and Shol, and the implications of the so-called gentleman's agreement, I want to also ask, aren't we concerned that if ever we pass laws on treason or we update our existing legal frameworks, that will also open it up to serious politicization, right? That every administration will come in and open up treason cases against the previous one. You can imagine that would have been the case against, I don't know, Aquino administration back in the day, or, you know, or intervention by Senator Trillanes on the Scarborough issue, among others. I see already in comment section some of the pro-Duterte people here saying, oh, what about this? What about that? I mean, how do we also safeguard against that possibility of very immature politicians weaponizing this?
It will be subject to abuse by a president like Duterte. Like Duterte, what he did was he canceled the amnesty of Trillanes. And today, there's an announcement in the newspaper that the Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional. So there is, you know, it's very important that we elect a decent president, because we have given so much power to the president, to the office of the president, because those powers are needed. But in the hands of a president who has no morals, who does not have the interests of the nation in his heart, then we will see these things happen. Giving away our exclusive economic zone, for me, that's really that's the height of disregard for the national interest. I mean,
some would say treason, but then again, we don't even have a serious law in that.
Yeah, there is no law. Yeah, it's really a culpable violation of the Constitution. And Congress is supposed to check that. But since they are under the thumb because of the for later release funds, they cannot do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the dynamics there. And that's why I think we have to do something about it, because this will really be a big problem for us. This will magnify later on into other problems unless we put a check on this.
Yeah, and so therefore, talaga importante for Senator Rizontiveros and others to really, in aid of legislation, no, not just for political investigation or anything like that, to do something about it so that we can move forward. The problem though is, hindi ba dapat committee ng National Defense or Foreign Affairs? I mean, Foreign Affairs is under IME, National Defense is under Jingoy. What about, I mean, we also have that dynamic in the Senate, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know in what committee it will be sent, no? I think that's the call of the Senate President and the majority. They want to give it to another committee. But I suppose it will go to the National Defense, probably.
Yeah, which is, I think,
genius. Or it could go to the committee of Senator Padilla, who is chairs the committee on revision of laws.
Ayan, okay, of course, our resident constitutional expert, right?
Yes, it can go to that. It should go properly to the Committee on the Revision of Laws, and that will be under...
And constitutional amendments,
Robin Padilla.
Yeah, Robin Hood Padilla, apparently.
Robin Hood, that's the correct... That's the real name.
I mean, otherwise, you still have the options of, I don't know, Committee ni Bato, or si Cayetano, di ba? I think Cayetano also chairs the committee. I mean, Wouldn't we expect Senator Cayetano to be a little bit more vocal about this issue, considering he was the Foreign Affairs Secretary during whose time allegedly this kind of gentleman's agreement at least came up, if not agreed upon, per Harry Roque? I mean, why would even Harry Roque make up stuff like that? I mean, I don't think it serves his interest unless this is about, you know, pleasing some people on the other side. What's going on here? I mean,
I don't know what committee chairs, but in the case of the charter change, you know, charter change would fall under the committee of Senator Robin Hood Padilla, because it's a revision of the Committee on Constitutional Law and Revision of Laws. But they created the Senate, the Senate of the President, the Senate President created a subcommittee that it will be handled by Senator Angara, Sonny Angara. And that's right. What happened. Maybe they can create a subcommittee.
Yeah, yeah.
It will be handled by maybe Senator Sonny Angara, somebody else.
Yeah, maybe sige, itatag ko na lang si Senator Sonny, because my worry was like, sino itatag natin dito? I mean, well, Jay Vercito could be one interesting partner for this. I mean, considering he has been quite vocal about Chinese pro-China fake news peddler in the Philippines and disinformation campaign. So as, because, you know, we're just looking at the reality of what we have at hand. Can we have, because when it comes to the issue of Kibuloy, issue of women rights, etc., okay na si Riza Ondivero, she has been doing her job, but my, you know, my question is, what do we do on these very, very sensitive issues? Pero Justice, balikan natin itong issue ng Ayong Inchol, because I wonder, you know, why would Harry Roque say something like the agreement was to stick to the status quo when everyone knows the status quo was going to be in favor of China? Because BRP Sierra Madre, I think no one has to be an engineering, marine engineering genius to realize bibigan, I mean, we bibigan na yan. I mean, it was just a matter of time before this will give up to the elements, give in to the elements. So a status quo would mean you're essentially paving the way for China to eventually occupy the area, or at least us losing any lever of direct administrative control on Ayong Inchol.
No, you know, Richard, I was surprised when he said the purpose was to preserve the status quo. What is a status quo? The status quo is we are in control of Ayong Inchol. So, and then the status quo, we kept on supplying our outposts there with food, materials, and water. But they changed the status quo by saying you cannot bring in materials, only food and water. So that's not the status quo. The status quo was before we were able to bring materials. So it was really, I call it lopsided in favor of China. Because everybody knows that if you don't retrofit, if you don't repair Sierra Madre, it will just collapse. And that will end our presence. So when Duterte agreed that there will be no repairs, he agreed that to end our presence there. That's the meaning of that. That's very clear. Because, you know, there was a time, Richard, when there was really a need to repair Sierra Madre. And, you know, we are a transparent government. You have to propose an item in the GAA that a certain amount must go to the repair of Sierra Madre. And they did that. So there was a law passed, the General Appropriations Act had an item, repair of Sierra Madre, certain amount. And the Chinese embassy had access, of course, and they saw it. So they knew that we're going to repair Sierra Madre. And so they encircled it with their maritime militia to prevent any materials from entering, from going to the Sierra Madre. So that started with that. It was that was about 10 years ago when that incident happened, when the Chinese found out that we were now going to repair Sierra Madre, and it was there in the budget. So, you know, we did not even hide it. It could have been hidden in, let's say, intelligence fund or something. But
yeah,
we were so
I was actually wondering, shouldn't that be where the intelligence fund comes in, whereby you don't allow your rivals,
yes,
or foreign powers to know
so
exactly what you're
doing?
We
were so transparent. And, you know, the purpose of this defense attaché, China's defense attaché in their embassy in Manila, and they read all of this The budget of the military is their number one the number one document. They really go line by line, and they saw there that there is an item to repair Sierra Madre. That's how it happened. We're so transparent.
Overly transparent, I would say, in that matter. Again, I mean, this is an interesting discussion, Justice, because, you know, like, you know, in some of our earlier podcasts and discussions, of course, both of, I mean, you and I, we're always worried about weaponizations of laws to clamp down on basic freedoms. Both of you have been calling for transparency, democracy. But I think we also have to understand that freedoms are not free, and there's a national security aspect, and you have to balance the two. So I'm very glad that we're having this discussion, Justice Carpio, because I think people are realizing that, you know, as much as we are for political freedom and all, we need to balance that against some serious national security consideration we're having as far as China is concerned. Now, quickly, Justice Carpio, you mentioned, you know, responsible presidents like Ramos and Pinoy, and not so responsibles like Senior and Digong. So you can guess what's my question right now. So where does that leave Junior in your estimation?
Well, I've said this before, that I'm pleasantly surprised that he has turned around in the West Philippine Sea, because before he was saying, remember during the campaign, he said, even before the campaign, he said that we are wasting our money. We should not be buying warships and warplanes because talo na tayo eh. I mean, if you have that mindset.
Very defeatist, yeah.
Yeah, very defeatist. But now he has turned around, and I'm supportive of that. I'm very happy now that we have a president who's there to defend the West Philippine Sea, to assert the arbitral award. And of course, there are other issues, but as far as the West Philippine Sea is concerned, I'm happy with what's with our foreign policy right now.
And speaking of the direction of our foreign policy right now, Justice, don't you think there could be also a problem of overcompensation? Because obviously we're in a catch-up time, right? We're trying to catch up for lahat ng mga kakulangan ng panahon ni Digong, catch up in terms of our defense capability acquisitions. So the counter-argument right now would be maybe Marcos Jr. is overly going into the American camp, and perhaps that could be also used by the Americans to push their own agenda in this part of the world. I mean, I know this sounds like a, you know, the usual propaganda from the left or something like that, but I mean, this is the United States after all. It has its own national interests, right? And I think as far as the US is concerned, they want maximal access to Philippine bases, whatever, because they want to protect Taiwan. They want to protect, I don't know, their own forward deployment capabilities in this part of the world. How do we also balance against that potential of overswinging to the other side? And what is your reading of how Marcos Jr. has so far been, conducting his foreign policy accordingly?
Well, I think the real purpose, the battle in the West Philippine Sea, is whether we can get the gas. At the end of the day, the EEZ is about natural resources. Can you exploit the natural resources in the EEZ that belongs to you? So at the end of the day, can we get the gas in Reed Bank? So it's very easy for we can send a message to China that if you don't want this new EDCA basis, additional EDCA basis to proceed, just don't stop us from getting the gas in Reed Bank. If you don't want us to go close to get closer to the US, don't stop us from getting our what belongs to us. I mean, I think all that we're doing now is trying to increase our leverage, to build up our leverage, and tell China what you're doing is forcing us to go to get closer to the Americans, because we need desperately the gas. It will be terrible for our economy if we have to import LNG. We have that's the Malampay supplies 40% of the energy requirement of Luzon. And if we have to import that, can you just imagine? I'm told by industry players that our power rates would go up tremendously. All the foreign investors will leave the country, because power is a very large component of operating costs, especially if you are in manufacturing. They will all leave, and even our domestic players, they cannot compete. if their power cost is so high. So we have to send a message that we have to get that gas. If you don't want the Americans to put up additional ECA sites, yes, we can stop that, but you have to give us our gas. Right, we are just developing a leverage now, and I think we still have to develop more leverage.
You know, leverage in terms of, you know, telling the Chinese that, you know, we have our options also in terms of giving access in EDCA, etc.
These EDCA sites will give us also a leverage with respect to the Americans. We will tell the Americans, you have to accompany us when we go to Reed Bank to survey and drill, just like what you did for Malaysia and Indonesia. So then it's a dual purpose. We use this to tell China, if you don't want these ECA sites, okay, but give us our gas. Don't prevent us. And for the Americans, we're giving you these ECA sites, additional ECA sites, but provide a joint patrol with us. Do a joint patrol with us when we go to Reed Bank. Because we are really late. It takes about 4 years to develop Reed Bank. And we don't have the gas. We have three large gas-fired plants in Luzon. All of them were supplied with gas from Malampaya. But now only two can be supplied. And at the end of this year, only one can be supplied. That means we will have to import LNG for this for these gas-fired plants. And it's very expensive. So that's the way I look at it. We have to build up our leverage, and it's a dual purpose.
And that's where your contention comes in. Yung dahilan na si Marcos Jr. ay nag-pivot dun sa issue or recalibrate sa issue ng West Philippines is really because he realized China is not going to budge on the Reed Bank, Recto Bank issue. Yeah.
Can you just imagine if we do not get the gas in Reed Bank, we have to import LNG. He will become very unpopular because inflation will go up. People now are, he has a two-digit drop in his ratings. It's because of inflation. Prices of goods are so high. And you can just imagine if we have to import all our, if we don't get gas from Malampaya and import all our LNG, inflation will go through the roof. He will become very unpopular. So it's a matter of political survival for his family that we should get the gas in Reed Bank. And the only country that can provide us with a military cover, naval cover, is the U.S. That's what happened in Malaysia. Malaysia got a cover from both the Americans and the Australian warships. Indonesia got a cover from the U.S.
I think that's an important thing to mention as we go towards the final part of our discussion. Isang oras na, bilis na naman as always, and I don't want to keep you too much justice. So your contention is that the reason why Malaysia, Indonesia, and to a certain degree even Vietnam are not having as much problem is because in their own time, a lot of that during Duterte time, they held their ground, right? Whether this is the West Capella, Petronas, unilateral drill by Malaysia from 2019 until 2020, 2021, whether this is Indonesian President Jokowi going to North Natuna Sea and drawing the line and saying there will be no compromise, or Vietnam and their 1,000 years of struggle against China. So it looks like our reading here is that the reason why China is so bullying us right now is because they feel they can impose their will on us in ways that they cannot on our neighbors. Okay, with our neighbors, they're eventually accepting a kind of a fragile status quo and investing in those countries. At tanggap nila hindi naman pushovers mga yan. So maybe they think we are pushovers because of the era. Yeah,
that's correct. Because during the time of Duterte was subservient, obsequiously subservient to China. He said, "I love President Xi Jinping. He doesn't want to displease." He barred our navy from patrolling the EEZ. So China got used to that. And China wants that to be the status quo. That's the status quo that Harry Roque is saying. We don't want that kind of status quo. So now that we are asserting our sovereign rights, China is, of course, reacting. But we cannot be the odd man out here. Everybody gets their gas except us. Why? Because we are stupid. we knelt before China. Duterte said, "I love President Xi Jinping." How can you say that when President Xi Jinping says you cannot get your gas? That's ours. How can he still love President Xi Jinping?
Right.
So we have to correct that. And President Marcos Jr., his political survival depends on that also. So he has no choice, really.
Therefore, we don't want to give him also too much of a credit, right? Because this is also a question of Marcos looking for its own interest, knowing what's in store. For the last part here, would it be enough joint patrols with the United States? I mean, to what degree do you think the Chinese will? I mean, dito sa ayong insyol kasi medyo nakakabala na yung situation, eh, di ba? Naging lethal na almost. Itong, I mean, yeah, people could get killed with the water pressure they're using. Kung tumama yan, nabangga ka, patay ka, di ba? If not directly, even yung parang punching power ng sampung Pacquiao yata yan. Eh. So we're already in this very serious situation here where China is really tightening the noose. Is joint patrols gonna do it? I mean, shouldn't there be something more drastic, aggressive? I don't know, like, while the Philippines is doing a resupply, should there be American warships just over the horizon or drones? I mean, what are we looking at here, realistically?
Well, we have to prioritize. I think in joint patrol in Reed Bank, there's no question that it's totally underwater. Even at a low tide, you don't see anything. So we should prioritize that. We have joint patrol. The U.S. has offered to have joint patrol there, and many countries have offered to have joint patrol, and they will, because they did that for Malaysia and Indonesia, with whom they don't even have a mutual defense treaty. Now, Eugene is special because it's low tide and very near Mischief Reef, and you know, it's a matter of pride for ourselves that we should be able to resupply our own. It should be the last resort. We should do everything to do it on our own before we ask the U.S. to jointly patrol at the time we deliver the supplies. I think we're not yet there. We can still deliver, although we get hit. But I think priority is to get the gas, and then we can talk. Sit down with Americans. I like that statement of the U.S. Admiral before the U.S. Congress that the use
John
of water
Aquilino.
Cannon.
Yeah, John Aquilino.
Yes, if somebody dies, if Coast Guard personnel dies because of a water cannon, then that is, we can invoke the treaty. Let's magnify that. Let's put that as the interpretation of what is an armed attack. Use that so that it sends a message to China. You cannot do that because we will invoke already. Because China doesn't want us to invoke the treaty, because if the U.S. goes there, they really cannot do anything. I mean, they have about 450 nuclear weapons. The U.S. has 5,500. They will be buried. They know that. They cannot afford to go to an all-out war. So their strategy is just to intimidate us.
And you think the Americans are all, yeah, but just
yeah.
Of course, they counter question. Do you think the Americans are also willing to push the envelope on this?
Yes, the Americans did it for Malaysia, for Indonesia, and the credibility of the U.S. is at stake here, and that's why every time they're here, an official, they repeat that the MDT, Mutual Defense Treaty, applies to the West Philippine Sea, including the Coast Guard. So they're really trying to recover their credibility, because they really botched it in Scarborough
past,
Shoal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they wobbled. Their knees wobbled in Scarborough Shoal.
And during your time also, right? In Mischief.
Yes.
They also didn't
Mischief
help us. They also didn't help us.
Yeah. So now they're trying to recover, and we can take advantage of that. But we know that we're not going, we don't want to go to war. We just want to get our natural, our oil and gas. We don't want to go to war with China. That's crazy. We want to get our gas. And that's our right. That's our legal right under international law.
So essentially the argument here is that China doesn't want war, the Philippines doesn't want war, the U.S. doesn't want war. But the fact of the matter is that if we don't fight our own fight, then US is not going to help us. And if US doesn't help us, then China is not going to respect us,
Yes.
right? I mean, that's essentially the logic here, right? Yeah.
Yes, that's the bottom line. So the US will help us if we help ourselves. We cannot tell the US, go get the gas for us. No, we have to go there. They will help us. They will protect us. But we have to do our part. And we have really to increase our naval strength, our air force, our military, because for them, they really spend a lot on their military. And if they see their mutual defense partners refusing to spend anything and relying on them completely, that's terrible. I mean, they will lose. I mean, they wouldn't want to help us.
Yeah, I mean, especially if someone like, I don't know, Trump comes back to the White House. I'm in South Carolina right now. I'm sure a lot of people here are excited for Trump 2.0. So, I'm wondering, what are we going to do once Trump comes back? And so these are some of the conversations I'm going to have with folks here in South Carolina before heading to the blue states in the coming days.
But Richard, the U.S. has been an isolationist before World War One, and it can happen again.
Exactly.
And
they
that's
have
why
that
we
strength.
Have to... Yeah, I mean, we cannot take for granted that U.S. will be there all the time, that the Mutual Defense Treaty will be there all of the time. We have to prepare for the day when the U.S. may get fed up spending their resources on defending areas far beyond their shores. So we really have to prepare for that day.
Just last point, Justice Scarpio. What keeps you awake at late at night? The Timo presidential question. Do you fear that there could be, I mean, obviously your contention, which I agree with, and even Deng Xiaoping, the wiser Chinese leader, said it, these are intergenerational struggles. But are you concerned that there could be some stupid mistake, especially smart guys there in China trying to look like a hero? I mean, are you worried about the kind of an accidental clashes and escalation accordingly, as President Marcos also mentioned in a recent interview with Bloomberg?
Well, I think the probability of an accidental skirmish or war is very low, because everybody knows the consequences. The U.S. we don't want war. China doesn't want war. In fact, the entire strategy of China, the warfare strategies, they will not fire a single shot. They will just intimidate. So everybody knows that you cannot cross that, because everybody loses, and and China will lose more, because militarily they're far behind the U.S. still. No, so I don't lose so much sleep over that, but I lose sleep over the possibility that we will miss the chance to get the gas in Reed Bank because of fear, because we allow ourselves to be intimidated, because that has happened in the last 6 years.
That's a very good point of us shooting ourselves in the foot or allowing ourselves to be intimidated, because I think a big part of the pro-China vloggers and disinformation campaign in the Philippines is to raise the fear of war, essentially to cower us into submission, which Duterte did many times. And I found that always interesting, because there's always this discussion of China as a peaceful country, harmonious, charot charot, diban, tapos war agad, diba? Like, this is always,
yeah,
I think, the weird part about that kind of narrative of
this. They keep repeating the Chinese propaganda, which is a lie, no? That China never invaded a country before. Throughout history, they've been invading. They tried to invade Japan twice, but failed.
Yeah.
They invaded Korea. They took a large chunk of Korea. They invaded Tibet and took over Tibet. They invaded Xinjiang. They invaded Vietnam several times, and
yeah.
Vietnam for 1,000 years fought them on and off.
Yeah, I mean, Xinjiang literally
also
means
in
the
the
frontier.
Himalayas.
Yeah, I mean,
in Nepal, in Bhutan. I mean, and they even invaded Southeast Asia. They invaded Java during the
Indonesia,
time
yeah.
of the Majapahit Empire.
Yeah. This is the Yuan dynasty. Of course, Chinese will say
they
these are the
invaded the West
Mongolians,
Philippine
not us.
Sea. Yeah, they invaded the West Philippine Sea. They invaded the Paracels. They invaded the, of course, the Vietnamese fought them for 1,000 years on and off.
Yeah. I mean, I always say to the people, do you think that China just dropped from the sky? How do you think they became so big? I mean, it started with a few kingdoms in the Yellow River and all, and next thing you know, it's a gigantic continental-sized nation. That didn't come up peacefully. I think people forget the Warring States period and the whole, romance of freaking. Now, last pinakalas, Justice Garvey, what gives you hope? What gives you a sense of confidence aside from the fact that hindi na si Digong yung presidente? Although one of the things that keep us awake at night is the fear of another Duterte coming back from Malacañang. But
Yes, that's
putting
true.
that aside, for a moment, what gives you a lot of hope, or at least a lot of a sense of momentum that we're moving in the right direction?
Well, we have I've always advocated for joint patrols, and we enlarge our visiting forces agreement with other countries, and it's happening. We're going to have that with Japan. UK and France are also offering. We have to have a network of allies, not necessarily mutual defense, but allies that will help us in peacetime, because mutual defense is really wartime. But in peacetime, you have to show your strength also. And we're doing that. I think we are in the right direction.
And Justice Carpio, are you also happy about, the direction of in terms of, yes, I mean, there's the disinformation, there's all of that. But my thing is, I think that's because something good is happening, right? I think they're realizing na namumulat ang taong bayan, no? Na people are beginning to appreciate and understand how important the stakes are dito sa West Philippine Sea.
Yes, I think we're raising the awareness, the level of understanding of our people. We just have to keep on talking and explaining.
On that note, thank you very much, Justice Carpio, former Justice Carpio, Associate Justice Carpio, for joining us. Also, my fellow, of course, columnist at the Philippine Daily Inquirer. I hope, Justice, we can have more of you. And then, of course, to plug it in, we also had an even more extensive discussion on my
Yes.
show, The View from Manila, on One News. So watch out also for that later this month. Thank you so much, Justice Carpio. Mabuhay ka, and hopefully, hindi kayo masawa sa amin.
Yeah, anytime, Richard, and thank you for inviting me, and thank you to our viewers.
God bless you. Have a good day, sir. Bye.
Bye.